Okay, so it's lovely to be here this morning. And thank you, Lucy, for doing that really long reading with your voice. Well done on getting through it. But I just wanted to stop for a moment before I start and ask you, when was the last time you felt compassion? When was the last time you felt moved? And I don't know if anyone here watches The X Factor or wants to admit to watching The X Factor. I don't watch it, but I have three children, so I've been through the living room when it's been on. And I don't know if you've seen those scenes where someone gets up to sing and you think, how did they get to this age and no one told them they couldn't sing? And, you know, they do their piece and then Simon Cowell or whoever gets up and just tears them to shreds. And you just see their little faces crumble. They seem to genuinely not realize that that's not their talent. And you just feel sorry for them. Or maybe you don't. I feel sorry for them. Or maybe it's when, you know, I don't know if you've all been there at school, or you've had children, or you've been taking part in sports day yourself, and you see all these kids running up the field, and there's always one little kid at the back, and you know, everyone's past the finish line, and they're still struggling to get up that field, and you just want to just help them along. You want to help them. But what does compassion mean? In the dictionary, compassion is defined as a strong feeling of sympathy and sadness for the suffering of others, and a desire to help them. So in short, it's an emotional reaction. It's a desire to respond and to help. And it asks us to do something to respond. But what does the Bible say? Well, in the Bible, the Greek word for compassion is used 12 times. And 9 of these times are by Jesus himself. And the literal translation of this word is to be moved to one's guts. So it's to be moved to the very core of your being. It's not just a simple fleeting feeling. And in that long passage that Lucy read, in Luke chapter 10, in verse 33, the Samaritan is described as having pity when he saw the injured man. He had compassion on him. So compassion means action. But this Samaritan, he didn't just stop. He got involved, he dressed the man's wounds, he provided transport, he took him to where he'd be looked after, and he left money so the innkeeper would keep looking after him. He made sure he had everything he needed. This Samaritan got well and truly involved in the life of this man, and he risked his safety. He delayed his schedule. He got his hands dirty. And in January, Keith and I had the opportunity to go to Jerusalem. And this is obviously a parable, so Jesus is talking about something that didn't happen. But the road that he's describing is there. And you can see this road, and it goes through a desert, so it's very hot. And the river cuts through the middle of this desert, and there are very steep walls in this valley. So if you're trying to get from one place to the other, as the Good Samaritan would have been, you have to either walk in the open desert, or you can choose to follow the route of this river, because of the steep walls of the valley, there's shade in there, there's shelter, and it's much more bearable. So most people choose to walk along this road. But of course, the robbers, the dodgy people know this as well. So they're waiting in the valley. They're waiting to catch people. And so this could have been a trap. By the Samaritan just stopping, he was risking his safety by stopping to help this man. And let's not forget, these were times of racial and social tension. You know, the Jews and the Samaritans did not like each other, yet he was the one to step across and act. And this, of course, this is Jesus' nature. He's full of compassion. And this is just one example he gave. He spent his life healing others, spending time with those who mourn. And he repeatedly preaches about sharing what we have with others. And in Matthew 9, verses 35 to 38, Jesus has been spending his time teaching and going around and ministering to others. And he looks out on the crowds of people and he's stirred up in his heart. And he says to his disciples, you know, pray to the Lord of the harvest that he would send more workers, because the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. But Jesus doesn't want anyone to suffer. He doesn't want anyone to be lost. He wants more people to help. He was a man filled with compassion, and he never turned his back on others. And in fact, there's more than 2,000 verses in the Bible that refer to issues of injustice and taking care of the poor. So we know we should be helping the poor. And, you know, I look around this church, and I've heard about Ghana. I've heard about lots of different things you're already involved in. And you're doing so much. And so the greatest challenge is, how do we go about helping? And of course, God's answer is the church. It's me and you. We are the ones who have the skills to go and help. And there's no plan B. God's plan for the world, plan A, is the local church. And it's just really encouraging to hear your prayers and to hear about the church growing in different countries. And there are 2.2 billion Christians, so that's nearly a third of the global population profess to be Christians. That's a lot of people. And these Christians are in some of the world's most remote, poorest, most difficult reaches of the earth. And of course, they've got lots of skills. You and I have lots of skills that we can use to help others. We can build houses, we can fly airplanes. Well, not everybody can fly an airplane, but lots of people can. And we can offer counseling, we can manage finances. Together, we're well equipped to meet the needs of our time. And if you think again of the Good Samaritan, he wasn't a doctor, he wasn't skilled in any particular way, but he took the time to help. He did what he could. He brought the man to where he knew he'd be helped, and he used the resources that were at his disposal to make sure the man was well cared for. And the same thing is happening across the world today. There are Christians and churches active in a lot of these areas where people are most in need, and they are being Jesus' hands and feet right where they are. They're doing what they can to help others. But what they often lack is finance and support, and that's where the global church can step in and help them. And together we make each other stronger. And now, Stuart, I wonder if you could bring up some of the photos. I'm just conscious of time, so don't worry, I'll not talk about all the photos. This is a little boy called Kishal, and a lady came and spoke at our church about 10 years ago. So we just had our little girl, Sophie. And if you click on to the next picture, this is Kishal again a year later, and if you click on again. So when we heard that there are children, you know, who, for the sake of basic medicine, are basically suffering, we thought, well, we just had Sophie, and the thought of Sophie not being able to have the help of a doctor when she needed it, it just stirred us up, and we thought, well, we can help one child. And so we started sponsoring this little boy, Kishal. And the lovely thing is that you get to write to him. So we exchange letters every 6 months, and you get to see him getting bigger, and you hear what he's doing in school. And the lovely thing is he will write to us, and he'll say, "Dear Mrs. Mack, what can I pray for you?" And it's a lovely thing. And in our church, people of all ages really enjoy doing this. We've got grandparents who sponsor the child, and they get their grandchildren to write the letters. We've got people who don't have children, but they just love this opportunity to transform a child's life. And that is what you're doing. You're actually helping this little child to access education, to access everything they need to literally transform their life. So if you click on again. So this is the family that I spoke to you about when I was talking to the children. And this is Benson and Jean, the parents. And then that's Lucy. And Lucy's eating some food there that her mother's cooked using the vegetables around her house. And if you click on again. And then this is the next day we went to a project further north. So this is in a more rural area. And that's my husband trying to dance badly. The children were laughing at us as we tried to keep up with the singing. We were very patient. But in the evening, we went home with one of the children. And it was a little boy called Eric. And we got to go to where he lived. And he was living with his mum and his auntie. And what had happened in the... So Kenya have just recently had elections, but their previous elections, there was quite a lot of unrest. And over 1,000 people were killed. And Eric's dad... You know, before this had all happened, they'd lived on a farm, they had everything they needed, and he'd lived on a farm with his mum and dad, but his dad was killed, and the other tribe took over their farm. So overnight, Eric's mum and Eric, and Eric's mum was pregnant, they fled overnight, and they were now living with Eric's auntie, and they'd been living this way for 5 years. And so when we met Eric, we went into his home, and he was playing outside with his friends. But when we sat down with his mom, I found it very difficult because, you know, John, who was with us, said, you know, just tell us a bit of your background and why you're here. And she said, well, I'm really angry because I don't understand why God would let this happen. You know, I was a good person. Me and my husband worked our farm. We didn't need anybody's help. We didn't need any money from anybody. And then overnight this happened. And so I'm really angry with God. And we were sitting there and it was very hard to respond or to think of the right words. And we don't know why all these horrible things happen and why what has happened in Barcelona. We don't know why these difficult things happen. But in the midst of this, Eric came running through the door and he was singing the songs that he learned on the project. And he was showing his mom, the Christians at church had helped him with his homework. So he was showing his mom the pictures he'd drawn. And you could just sense that God was still, he hadn't given up on his family. He was still reaching out to this family and showing them that he loved them and he hadn't given up on them. And for me, that was just really humbling. And if you click on to the next one, Stuart. So this was back in Nairobi, so this was our final day. And if you can you see the pig in that picture? So the pig there, this was actually a slum called Mithari. And I don't know, has anybody here seen The Constant Gardener? It won a few Oscars. Yeah, it's a really good film. And it's set in Kibera. And this was Mithari, which is another huge slum, just like Kibera, just next to it. And as far as you can see, there's just thousands of these little tin homes. And when Nairobi, when there's a heavy downpour, all the waste from the city sweeps down, and this pig is actually standing on the waste from the city, and it's actually standing on the roofs of the houses. So just to live there is just horrible. And if you click on, this is the river that runs through the middle of Mithari, and there are two taps for over 10,000 people. So if you don't have money to pay whatever gang is, you know, controlling the taps that day, then you have to drink from this river. So infant mortality, disease, everything, it's really, the life expectancy in this slum is very low. And if you click on again, and you just saw little kids wandering around. And then if you move on to the next one, in the middle of this slum, there's a church, and it's just a tiny church. But on the side of their church, they've built a school, and they have 200 children, over 200 children now. When we were there, it was 200, and they're all coming in, they're learning, they're so clean, and they've got their uniforms on, and they're so excited to see us and show us what they've been doing that day. And again, it's just these local Christians who are reaching out and inviting them along and helping them with their homework, helping them with their studies. And if you click on again, yeah, so why am I here today, or what prompts me to be here? Well, when we were going in, so Mithari is obviously a very dangerous place, so there is a fence around the church, and this little girl was outside the fence, and there were lots of children wandering around, but lots of them were little groups, whereas this little girl was on her own, she had no shoes, there was broken glass everywhere, and when we left, it was over an hour later, and she was still just standing there. And, you know, for me, I just think for every child that's helped, that means that's one more child who's brought inside the project, who's been looked after, who's been loved and cared for. And I want to play you a little video now. And it's about a girl called Ginseli. And it just gives you a bit of her background and how she grows up and how she now helps many other children in her own project. And I'm going to sit down and close with this. But if you do want to help, I've brought with me the photographs of 12 children, and they're all from the same project as Precious, who Stuart sponsors in Uganda. And if you'd like to help one of them, like little Isaac, just come and speak to me after. It's 83 pence a day, and I will help you organize it. Or if you just want to come and speak to me and ask me questions, then that's fine as well. And thank you for listening. Thank you.
Every day, millions of children fight for their lives. They face a dangerous enemy, one who would steal their joy, their childhood, and their hope. That enemy is poverty. For a young girl like Karina, poverty doesn't just mean hunger, ill health, and a lack of opportunity. It means fear and vulnerability as she's forced to fend for herself and her younger brothers and sisters, while her parents struggle every day to put food on the table. They lack the most basic of needs, and without intervention, Karina's future is an all too familiar story. Ginseli, a dentist from the Dominican Republic, knows more than most about the plight of those in need.
Karina reminds me when I was her age, because I used to live in a house like that with only one room and no bathroom inside. It's a story of daily struggles. You start just looking at yourself like you don't have any value. You think, I cannot change what I am. My fear was to end my life as the teenagers that I saw. I always wanted to be a dentist. When I just come to my reality, I just understand that I couldn't afford that.
If we didn't have just a little bit of rice in our house,
how come can I pay in university? How come can I think and study?
Four years ago, Karina's life changed through the help of Compassion when someone at a church event chose to become her sponsor. Ginselli knows what a difference this makes.
My story changed when Compassion, with my sponsor and also the team of my church, came to my life. It was really exciting for me to go to the project because I knew that a lot of friends were waiting for me. And also because my director was really lovely. She used to hug us. She used to ask her, "Hey, Ginselli, how are you?" Through the project, I was able to go to my school with my stomach full of food. If I get sick, I have someone to take care of me. Every day we have someone who teaches a Bible story, and we used to sing, and sometimes the teacher just stand up and say, "Who can start praying?" And a lot of kids were raising their hands, and it means that we just believe in God. God was with us. We, as a child, we are seeds. And if someone just take us and put us in the right earth and give us water through letters and water through the team of Compassion, we start growing. And one day, we start giving fruits. My sponsor used to write it to me, "I can do everything in Jesus Christ." So in the deep part of my heart, I knew that God was able to do something with my dreams. If I were able to have my sponsor in front of me, the only thing that I can just tell her is just thank you. Thank you so much for changing my life. Thank you so much for my past. And thank you so much for what I am right now. Because what I am right now is because God used her so much. If someone is considering and sponsor a child, what I can say is just do it. Don't think about it, just do it. That's it.
Thanks to Donna for coming today, for sharing with us about Compassion. She will be standing just at the side here with the Compassion stuff. Please do, after the service, come and speak to her to find out more. I'll be at the door as usual, but I won't be offended if you choose to come and speak to Donna instead. So please do.